Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
An Erio's original.
I was born with a special gift. The ability to mentally transform any situation into the worst case scenario in my own brain. My therapist calls my gift catastrophizing. And that's why I'm uniquely qualified to scrutinize and analyze history's greatest disasters and find out who's to blame. They say history repeats itself. Not on my watch. My name is Rebecca Delgado Smith, and I am the Alarmist.
Hey everyone, thanks for tuning into The Alarmist, a comedy podcast where we talk about history's greatest tragedies and figure out who's to blame. Today we'll be discussing the Oklahoma City bombing. Here's what you need to know. On the morning of April 19, 1995, an ex-Army soldier and security guard named Timothy McVeigh drove to the Alfred P. Murrah Federal Building in downtown Oklahoma City. Inside the rented Ryder truck that he drove was a homemade bomb made out of agricultural fertilizer, diesel fuel, and other chemicals. Just mere blocks away, while still driving the truck, he lit two fuses set to go off in minutes. When he got to the building, he parked the truck in a drop-off zone situated under the building's daycare center. McVeigh got out of the truck, locked the door, and calmly walked away. At 9:02 a.m., the bomb exploded. What happened next was something out of a war movie. The destruction was massive. A third of the building was destroyed by the explosion, flattening floors like pancakes and creating a 30-foot crater next to the building. More than 300 nearby buildings were damaged or destroyed, but the death toll was even more devastating. 168 people lost their lives that day, including 19 children. Approximately 850 people were also injured. At the time, it was the worst act of homegrown terrorism in U.S. history.
Was an attack on innocent children and defenseless citizens. It was an act of cowardice, and it was evil.
If it seemed like war yesterday, the reinforcements showed up tonight. At the center of it all, of course, is the bombed-out shell of the federal office building, and in its shadow, the exhausted, who for a day and a half now have sifted through its debris and counted its dead and seen up close why they call it terror.
and the media quickly reported the assumption that the attack had been orchestrated by Middle Eastern terrorists. These reports led to anti-Muslim hysteria across the nation. Shortly into the rescue and recovery, law enforcement agencies found the rear axle of the Ryder truck, which yielded the vehicle identity number. It was traced back to a rental agency in Junction City, Kansas, where employees were able to give sketch artists a description of the man who had rented the van. Agents were able to identify their first suspect after showing the composite drawing to a local hotel employee. There, they supplied the name from their records, Tim McVeigh. But law enforcement officials did not have to go far to find McVeigh. As it turns out, he was already in jail. Just 90 minutes after the bombing, an Oklahoma state trooper 80 miles north of Oklahoma City had pulled him over because the vehicle he was driving, the getaway car used after the bombing, was missing a license plate. During the stop, the state trooper noticed McVeigh had a concealed weapon and no permit for it. McVeigh was taken into custody. It was later discovered that McVeigh and his army friend, Terry Nichols, had stolen dynamite from a quarry in Kansas, used false names to purchase 4,800 pounds of ammonium nitrate, rented storage lockers, and robbed an Arkansas gun dealer at gunpoint, all in preparation for the bombing. The realization that Timothy McVeigh and his accomplice, Terry Nichols, had been behind the attacks, two military veterans, was a shock to the nation. McVeigh saw the bombing as a justifiable retaliation against the federal government and was quoted as saying that the murder of innocent people that day was, quote, collateral damage. On August 11, 1995, McVeigh and Nichols were indicted on murders and conspiracy charges. 2 years later, Nichols was convicted on federal charges of conspiracy and 8 counts of involuntary manslaughter and sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole. McVeigh was convicted on 11 counts of murder, conspiracy, and using a weapon of mass destruction. He was sentenced to death.
This morning, the United States of America carried out the severest sentence for the gravest of crimes. The victims of the Oklahoma City bombing have been given not vengeance, but justice. And one young man met the fate he chose for himself 6 years ago.
Fun facts, aka death stats. The blast killed 168 people, including 19 children, and injured approximately 850 people. The governor's office reported that 30 children were orphaned, 219 children lost at least one parent, 462 people were left homeless, and 7,000 people lost their workplace. According to the Oklahoma Historical Society, the final report estimated property damage to more than 300 buildings in a 48-square-block area. The effects of the bomb could be felt and heard up to 55 miles away. The Alfred P. Murrah Federal Building housed offices for the Social Security Administration, the Drug Enforcement Administration, the Secret Service, and the ATF, among other organizations. It also housed a Veterans Counseling Center, a military recruitment office, and a daycare center. The building was later razed, and a park and memorial were built on the site. At the time of the explosion, McVeigh was 26 years old. The t-shirt McVeigh was wearing when he was arrested quoted Thomas Jefferson, "The Tree of Liberty must from time to time be refreshed with the blood of patriots and tyrants."
With us today, we have producer Amanda Lund.
Hi, Rebecca.
Fact checker Chris Smith.
Hello.
And our very, very special guest is Kathy Kinzora, host of History of the 90s podcast. Hi, Kathy.
Hey, guys.
You guys, I highly recommend Kathy's podcast, History of the 90s. There are so many things that you don't even realize happened in the 90s. For one, I was just listening to the online dating episode.
Wait, did online dating start in the 90s?
It did. Match.com was founded in the 90s. That was the first official online dating service, and it started in the 90s.
Wow. Imagine trying to get a date wearing baggy jeans and, like, puka shells and stuff. That would be tough, don't you think, Amanda?
Oh, no, actually, I'm attracted to that.
Kathy, I'm just so curious, since you're a 90s expert, is there a specific disaster or tragedy other than the Oklahoma City bombing of the 90s that you could suggest that we cover eventually?
Well, I see that you guys did Waco already, so that's a good one. And O.J. Simpson trial obviously is a huge, you know, milestone, I guess, of the 90s. It was in 95, same year as the Oklahoma City bombing. There were internationally, there was also the assassination of Yitzhak Rabin. And then I'm trying to think, there were a number, like other than Waco, there were Heaven's Gate cult. We just talked about that on the podcast.
Oh.
As well as there was a cult in Japan that initiated a sarin gas attack on their subway system. So doomsday cults were really a big thing in the 90s because we were coming to the end of the 20th century. So it really heightened their game. Like they, you know, they stepped it up for sure.
But I'm fascinated by this doomsday. You know, why was the 90s so prone to these doomsday disasters?
Yeah. Well, a lot of it, again, was because of the end of the 20th century was coming to, you know, coming ever close. But also the rise of the internet happening at the same time. So these cults were able to sort of expand their reach further than they could in the past, when they would just have to stand on the corner and hand out pamphlets and, you know, try to attract people that way. But suddenly, like Heaven's Gate, they're considered the first cult of the internet because they had a website. And funny thing, it's still up there if you want to look at it in all its glory, like heavensgate.com. And there's still some people.
Wow, they got the .com.
Yeah, and they are, and there's still people that will answer questions if you send them a question. I sent them one, and they answered the same day. So it's a bit creepy, but it's also kind of cool. But I think that has a lot to do with it. So the rise of the internet, which plays into so many stories from the 90s, that really was, you know, even when we were talking about online dating, it's because of the rise of the internet. So many things changed, and I think that's why the 90s is such a crazy time.
It really was. And that kind of segues into the first person that I want to put up on the board. Mm-hmm. Was a big doomsday prepper himself, Timothy McVeigh. Clearly, mm-hmm. he was the lead bomber in this case. A little background on McVeigh. According to History.com, while still in his teens, McVeigh, who was raised in Western New York, acquired a penchant for guns and began honing survivalist skills that he believed would be necessary in the event of a Cold War showdown with the Soviet Union. During his adolescence in upstate New York, Timothy McVeigh developed an enthusiasm for guns and a suspicion for governmental authority. He drew inspiration from the 1978 novel The Turner Diaries, written by the white nationalist William Luther Pierce, which it depicts a right-wing insurrection against a tyrannical federal government seeking to deprive citizens of their right to bear arms. But this was only the beginning of McVeigh's anti-government stance. He graduated from high school in 86, and instead of attending college, he took odd jobs, one of which was a security guard. According to a Fox article, his former co-worker remembered McVeigh as looking like, quote, Rambo. So by 1988, he's enlisted in the Army, and that's where he proved to be a disciplined and meticulous soldier. While in the military, McVeigh befriended his fellow soldiers, Terry Nichols, who we'll talk about later. You know, he's decorated with several medals for his military service, but he does not qualify for the Special Forces program, the Green Berets. After his discharge in 91, he begins frequenting gun shows and develops a stronger suspicion of the U.S. government. At the time, the American military was downsizing after the collapse of the Soviet Union. Another result of the end of the Cold War was that McVeigh shifted his ideology from a hatred of foreign communist governments to a suspicion of the U.S. federal government, especially at its new leader, Bill Clinton, who was elected in 92 and had successfully campaigned for the presidency on a platform of gun control.
So McVeigh definitely goes on the board. Clearly, this guy's pretty paranoid.
And you mentioned that he read the Turner Diaries, which I'm sure you're going to get to more, but that would definitely go up on the board because I'm not sure when he started to get into the Turner Diaries, but I think it factored heavily into, you know, this belief that he had that the government was corrupt and trying to take away his rights. And it even depicts a truck bombing of a government building in the Turner Diaries. So I think that was a big influence on him.
Yeah, I think let's put the Turner Diaries right up on the board. I think because I do think he was influenced by it at a pretty early age. Now, for those of you who don't know, I actually had never heard of the Turner Diaries before this. But the Turner Diaries is a 78 novel by William Luther Pierce, and it's published under the pseudonym Andrew MacDonald. And it depicts a violent revolution in the U.S., which leads to the overthrow of the federal government, a nuclear war, and ultimately a race war, which leads to a systematic extermination of non-whites. All groups opposed by the novel's protagonist, Earl Turner, including Jews, non-whites, liberal actors, and politicians, are exterminated.
He was obsessed with that book, so he carried it around with him. He read it a number of times, handed it out to people, ripped out pages. I think he had a copy of it on him when he was arrested. So it was a big factor, in his decision-making.
And didn't he use it as a blueprint? Like there was a similar bombing that mm-hmm. he basically copied, right?
Yeah, that's what you were saying, Kathy, right? There was
in the book, there's a truck bombing of a government building. So, you can't say for sure that's where he got the idea because it's not like it's a unique idea, but it's certainly, a book that he was very familiar with. So, it can't be just a coincidence.
Should we just put books up on the board?
Or maybe like a lack of a good book club. Like if he had maybe read, I guess Brené Brown wasn't around back then, but I don't know.
Or Oprah.
Your hands Oprah's on book Oprah's club book didn't list.
Exist. Right?
There's something so creepy about the fact that it's fiction too. It's like a fiction narrative about like a racist Rambo, which is so powerful and disturbing.
And that there's people buying it and reading it. That's what I find disturbing.
Well, the concept of this like race war thing was not, it was also, it was happening before 78 when the book was written. So like Manson really thrived on this whole idea. And I'm sure he wasn't the person to come up with it. It feels like it was brewing in the country for a while. Maybe the 60s are to blame.
When would Timothy McVeigh have been born? I don't know that off the top of my head, but perhaps he was born in the 60s.
Well, he was 26 in 95.
Yeah, 68.
Yeah, then he definitely was. Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, so definitely the 60s are to blame.
Okay, great. I love how direct you are, Kathy. I just love your decisiveness.
We're getting to it. Sorry. I'm very efficient.
Belong in the squad.
I also want to put up on the board not just the book, The Turner Diaries, but the author, William Luther Pierce, who just seems like a total complete scumbag. And because The Turner Diaries are also, like, people have referenced that as inspiration for other horrific acts of hate crimes. So I just think the guy mm-hmm. himself should be on the board as well.
Put him up. I also think we should put up doomsday prepping just, in itself, the concept. And I want to... I've been watching Alone. Amanda and Chris and I are huge fans of this TV show, Alone. I don't know if you've seen. Same. Okay, great. We are so simpatico. Come on. Yep. So we're all huge Alone fans. And that's very different. Like, those are survival. They keep saying he's a survivalist. That, to me, is a survivalist skill. Like, being, able to survive.
It's a fine line between a survivalist and... someone like Timothy McVeigh. No, I shouldn't say that, because survivalists have a lot of great skills. And I think we learned during COVID that we may want to all prep a little bit better for, certain situations. But the type of doomsday prepper that you're talking about is someone more like that plays into this story is Randy Weaver, who was the gentleman at Ruby Ridge. Right. I don't know if you were going to get into that, but he's a different kind of doomsday prepper. Like, it's almost like you're prepping for the government to come take over, whereas survivalists are prepping for maybe a man-made or environmental disasters, which not a bad idea in this day and
turns
age.
It turns out it's not a bad idea.
Or an adventurous camping trip, like survivalists.
Right,
just
exactly.
Like, I like to be alone sometimes.
Or a hike.
Exactly.
A hike gone wrong,
Exactly.
But the Well, I hear from this Fox article, McVeigh developed a fascination for the ideology of paramilitary groups whose numbers were growing throughout the United States. In addition to gun magazines like Soldier of Fortune and Guns and Ammo, McVeigh started reading newsletters like that of the overtly anti-Semitic Liberty Lobby, Christian Identity, and Christian Identity's The Patriot Report. So there seems to be some correlation here with these doomsday preppers and these paramilitary groups.
Right. Yeah, they think the government's after their guns and their property, and they like you're saying, I think the purest incantation of is that guy Randy Weaver, who
well, let's talk about Randy Weaver. Both McVeigh and Nichols, who we still haven't talked about, but we'll get to him, were radicalized by the events of the August 92 shootout at Ruby Ridge, Idaho. U.S. Marshals attempted to apprehend a man named Randy Weaver at his family's remote hillside cabin in northern Idaho. Weaver, who had resisted efforts by the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, ATF, to force him to inform on the white supremacist group Aryan Nations, hadn't shown up for his trial on weapons charges. An initial exchange of fire left Weaver's 14-year-old son and a U.S. Marshal dead. Federal authorities then laid siege to Weaver's cabin for 11 days, during which an FBI sniper was wounded. An FBI sniper wounded Weaver and a family friend, Kevin Harris, and killed Weaver's wife, Vicky. So there's a standoff for 11 days. I guess the ATF was trying to get information on... It wasn't even Randy Weaver that they wanted. They were just using this guy, Randy Weaver, to get the information on this Aryan Nation group. And it just turned out that Randy Weaver was a kind of like a doomsday prepper.
Yeah, and he was trying to avoid gun charges. So he moved his family to this remote location, as you said. And I think because the idea that gun charges and the right to bear arms factors in really heavily with the doomsday preppers and the right-wing militias that are all tied into this group, that he became a symbol of overreach by the government. He should be entitled to have weapons. He shouldn't have been charged in the first place, which forced him to move out there, which forced them to track him there. So I think that's the direct line to Randy Weaver and then to Waco and to Timothy McVeigh. Like, I think you can, it's a direct link from from one to the other. And you can even throw in the bombing at the Atlanta Olympics, which is what I was thinking of earlier when you're talking about big disasters from the 90s. But Eric Rudolph, the person who was ultimately responsible for that, was also of that ilk. Like, he was also a doomsday prepper who lived out in the woods for, you know, a number of years after the Atlanta bombing.
Yeah, a lot of, like, I guess what you can call them, homegrown terrorism is happening at this time.
I wonder what that is, Kathy, as an expert of the 90s, culturally, like, what was going on with these young white men who were doing this?
It's hard to know, other than that the idea that it was only in the 90s, I think, is wrong. You shouldn't think that. We did hear more about it in the 90s, but it still exists today, that there's still these groups, but the attention was really taken away from them after 9/11. All of, you know, the U.S. government's resources and, you know, investigators were put into international terrorism as opposed to homegrown terrorism. And they still exist. It's still happening. There still are militia groups. There still are, racist organizations, as we saw in North Carolina or in Charlotte. Charlottesville? Sorry, is that? I think Charlottesville, where the protester was killed, I guess, a couple of summers ago. So it still does exist, but it seemed more prevalent in the 90s because we were hearing more about it. But certainly there was something else going on, and it seemed to be this kind of building effect from Ruby Ridge to Waco to Oklahoma. It just seemed to keep building one on top of the other.
McVeigh actually is believed to have picked April 19th as the day of the bombing, because it was the anniversary of the 1993 Waco raid, and the opening shot of the Revolutionary War in Concord and Lexington in 1775. Mm. So there was definite significance on the date, you know, for him. While we're in the subject, I think we need to talk about these right-wing extremist paramilitary anti-government groups. Andrew Cohen, fellow at Brennan Center, the right-wing extremists who embraced and nurtured McVeigh and Nichols, and who in turn were inspired by them, had risen up during the Clinton presidency, enraged by the siege at Waco. They had hoped that an act of domestic terrorism would spawn some sort of armed revolution. Now, McVeigh wrote letters to the Lockport Union Sun and a journal in February and March of 1992. The first of these letters bewailed rising crime, cataclysmic taxes, politicians serving only themselves, and the disappearance of the American dream. Substitute it with people struggling just to buy next week's groceries. Just as communism failed, he said, democracy seems to be headed down the same road. No one is seeing the big picture. America is in decline. He closed by saying, do we have to shed blood to reform the current system? I hope it doesn't come to that, but it might. Now, in the summer of 1992, McVeigh made his first extended visit to Terry Nichols' house in northeast Michigan farm owned by Nichols' brothers. From early 1993 until shortly before the bombing, McVeigh moved between Kingman, Arizona, and northeast Michigan, two centers of burgeoning interest in paramilitary anti-government organizations. Now, this is an interesting tidbit, but McVeigh dropped out of the NRA in 1994, saying that the group was soft on defending assault weapons. So the NRA was too soft for him.
Yeah, and I think Terry Nichols or his brother or both were kicked out of the Michigan militia because they were too radical for the Michigan militia. So these are guys at the edge of extreme.
Do we dare put the Second Amendment on the board? Kathy's not going to touch it.
This might be our most controversial
episode. As a Canadian, I'm stepping back from that issue. I'll leave that one for you guys. Yeah, that's yours.
This
you
is
guys.
Our mess. That's fair.
Decide on that one. Nope.
It causes a lot of problems. I'm just going to say
that's
that.
True.
The modern interpretation of the Second Amendment is causing all sorts of problems.
Wasn't there a law that passed, like, recreational firearms that really got McVeigh fired up about certain weapons bans that restricted certain kinds of guns that he was really
mad
about?
Not sure. Probably sounds right, but yeah, I don't know.
Yeah,
for the fact checker,
sounds right up his alley.
Yeah, that's me. Shouldn't have brought it up if I didn't want to have to go and dig in for it. Okay, I'll get on it.
We definitely have to put white supremacy up on the board. He was, you know, involved in those groups. And if you ask a white supremacist, too, because there's apparently some news, Buffalo News interviewed Horace Scott Lacey, who distributed White Counterpoint, which I guess is white supremacist reading. And he said that he thought McVeigh was a man of action, but in my opinion, he wasn't racist or a white nationalist. Technically, he shared some of the views, but he wasn't a diehard racist. He was more anti-government. So McVeigh wasn't racist enough for white supremacists.
Well, at least there's that.
Now, we have to talk about Terry Nichols. We cannot talk about him. He's a huge part of this case. He is born in 1955 in Michigan, and he meets McVeigh during his short enlistment in the Army in 1988. The two become friends due to their shared political beliefs system. They have an interest in guns and survivalist movement. Nichols was 15 years older than McVeigh, and he had a child with an ex-wife and two more children with his current wife at the time, who was from the Philippines and whom he had met through a mail order bride service. It's believed that Nichols helped McVeigh gather the supplies for the bomb and stored them, and he also helped make the bomb and set up the van. Now, toward the end, they think that he might have had second thoughts, But as he told investigators, McVeigh threatened to kill him if he backed out. On the day of the bombing, this is according to Britannica.com, Nichols was hundreds of miles away at home, so he wasn't there. The prosecution suggested that Nichols drove McVeigh from Junction City, Oklahoma, to Oklahoma City on April 16 to drop off the getaway car. His former wife, Lana Padilla, testified that Nichols had left a package with her to open in the event of his death while he was in the Philippines one time. In the package, she found a letter written to McVeigh in which Nichols urged McVeigh to, quote, go for it. Nichols' anti-government views developed and grew over the years. Nichols spent most of his adult life in Lapeer and Sanilac County areas of Michigan, where mistrust and resentment of the federal government was common, especially after bank repossessions of many farms in the 1980s. So he was definitely radicalized. Nichols was radicalized. And his friendship with McVeigh was, I guess you could call him an enabler. No, I mean, I would say more than an enabler, really. He was an active participant until an accomplice, until toward the end where he realized, I think, that he was actually going to do it. I don't know.
But also, Nichols' brother was also, James Nichols is the farm that they were, you know, coming up with this plan and practicing, I think, detonating bombs. So he was indicted, but the charges were dismissed. But I mean, you would think he plays a role in it, as well as there were a couple other people in his life, in McVeigh's life, that knew what he was up to or what he was planning to do. The Fortiers, Michael and his wife, and then even McVeigh's sister, Jennifer McVeigh. She, you know, he didn't say specifically, but he had this anger that she was well aware of against the FBI, and he was kept saying something big was planned. He had left documents on her computer to give to the ATF if something big happened. So, you know, you wonder how much do these people play a part in the responsibility if someone had have stepped up and said something.
I think you're absolutely right. And I think we can call them those who didn't tattletale.
There you go.
Tattletale. Because I think there were a lot of people, like you said, it wasn't just Nichols who didn't, you know, in the last minute backed out and then didn't say anything. Like you said, there was Michael Fortier, which we should actually put him up because he's the most, repulsive of the ones who didn't tell. Because he actually, so he's also a friend from the army. He meets McVeigh in the army and then he leaves and they keep in touch. He's actually, McVeigh is the best man at Fortier's wedding. So they had a strong connection. And he actually went with McVeigh to scout the building, but then he dropped out. And later, he was actually sentenced to 12 years in prison for failing to warn authorities. And the reason he got a more lenient sentence was because he agreed to be the star witness for the prosecution.
Right.
I think he was put in the witness protection program, too.
Yes.
I was just going to say, I believe that him and his wife and kids are in the witness protection program.
So let's put 48 up there. And then the group of the other like side characters who didn't tattletale. I wanted to throw up the Gulf War and the military. Those were two key components to McVeigh's radicalization, I guess. He was a decorated sergeant. I believe he was a sergeant. It's in the Gulf War that he becomes even more disillusioned with the U.S. government. He apparently thought the war was too easy and essentially it wasn't a fair fight, and that the Iraqis didn't really stand a chance against the weaponry and the machinery of the U.S. And it's also his trying to get into the Green Berets and failing was a huge factor. Apparently, he washed out after the first day, so he didn't stand a chance. They had given him these 45-pound backpacks and told them to march without a destination. And he essentially he was not physically ready to do this kind of thing. In all fairness, I don't like tasks without purpose.
Clear objectives. So,
but yeah,
for sure. I mean, there is no justifying ending lives like this, and there's no like rationalization of that. But then when you go to war, you know, you expect citizens to carry out these heinous acts in the same breath. The contradiction inherent in the American military force is, you know, so blatant. And if you tilt it in the right way, you can see how somebody like that, like Timothy McVeigh, could look at both of these events and not draw a distinction between the two.
And, you know, I think of that with as well as sports figures as well as military people in the military. You expect them to be vicious animals when they're overseas. When they come home, we're surprised when they can't, you know, adapt into the world and have difficulties. But another 90s story I think of often is Mike Tyson, who became a convicted rapist and was in trouble with the law numerous times. But we want him to go into the ring and beat the crap out of someone. And then we're surprised when he acts a different way, you know, or the same way in public. So it's sometimes you feel like you reap what you sow. And maybe with Timothy McVeigh, I think you're onto something there with the idea of putting the Gulf War up on the board.
And now to expound on this subject, let's speak with Dr. Kathleen Belew, Assistant Professor of U.S. History at University of Chicago and author of Bring the War Home, The White Power Movement and Paramilitary America. How did the Gulf War affect the early 90s period in U.S. history?
Great question. Complex question. The Gulf War had a lot of ramifications going in a lot of different directions. But I think, you know, one of the clearest ways to understand it is that it is a war. It was a short war. It's one that people thought of as restaging the Vietnam War and ending what people called Vietnam Syndrome, or the idea that America felt emasculated and disempowered by the loss of the Vietnam War, and that we somehow needed to collectively fight and win another war in order to sort of clear that legacy. I think the more important impact for understanding the Oklahoma City bombing is that it created another moment of aftermath of warfare. If you look at Klan and white power activity across the whole arc of American history, what is really significant is that the surges in that activity align more consistently with the aftermath of warfare than they do with poverty, anti-immigration violence, civil rights gains, and any other number of measures that people have often understood as being related to Klan activity. What we see instead is that every time there is a war, there is an aftermath effect. Now, what's really interesting is we might think that that has to do with simply the return of veterans from combat. It turns out that that impact is across ages, across gender, across people who did and did not serve. All of us become more violent in the aftermath of warfare. So you see that percolating across American society in the 1990s.
Listen to our full interview with Dr. Belew on Thursday's episode of The Aftermath. Now back to our discussion.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Who's to blame for the Oklahoma City bombing? Timothy McVeigh, Turner of Diaries, and William Luther Pierce. The 1960s, Doomsday Preppers, Ruby Ridge and Waco, and the bombing at the Atlanta Olympics. Right-wing extremist groups, the Second Amendment, white supremacy, Terry Nichols and James Nichols. Those who didn't tattletale.
That's Michael the name Fortier. Of Rebecca's memoir.
And it's her with one hand on a hip and one hand wagging a finger in the air.
Those are the book of poems.
Those who didn't tattletale. Yes, she gives them to.
Careful.
Andrew Lloyd Webber, he makes a musical album. All right, then the Gulf War and the military.
I'm so glad you're with us today, Kathy, because this is going to be a hard one.
Yeah, this is.
I don't even know what's the first one. I was hoping the bad, maybe books, lack of book clubs would be on here, because then we could just strike that one off first.
Well, I think the 1960s seems like a pretty easy target. Sorry, Kathy, did I step on you?
No, that's exactly what I was going to say. I think there was a lot of good people born in the 60s. We can't just wipe out a whole decade because of one guy. So
I like the way you think. Big picture, yeah.
I would say we could maybe take off white supremacy just because the white supremacists were saying he wasn't racist enough.
Right. It went beyond racism, I guess, for McVeigh. It wasn't so much about that.
I think maybe doomsday preppers don't necessarily need to be there. It was more, I would say it was more the right-wing extremist groups, which we should separate the two because, like you're saying, the people on alone, the survivalists, love them.
That's right.
Don't want to paint them with the same brush. So,
okay. So we still have Timothy McVeigh, the Turner Diaries, Ruby Ridge, Waco, all those things. Second Amendment?
Not the Atlanta Olympics because they happened after.
Okay. So, okay.
So, yes, they happened after.
So Waco and Ruby Ridge.
Oh, they happened after. Okay.
Yes.
Do we think he would have been as radicalized if he had not gone to war?
Possibly, or did he have some kind of brain injury? You never know.
Yeah, he met Michael Fortier and Terry Nichols in the army. So I don't think we can take it off. I guess we can take the Turner Diaries off.
Oh God.
Oh, I would leave them.
Me too.
Listen, if we're talking about causation here, I almost like the Turner Diaries better than like Ruby Ridge and Waco.
On Waco, though, you probably saw this in your research. McVeigh traveled to Waco during the siege and sat outside. And there's a documentary that shows him sitting on his car, handing out bumper stickers and pamphlets about his beliefs. Yeah,
I did see that. So creepy.
Yes,
and the fact that he like watched every single night. I read that he would watch every single night the nightly news because they would cover it.
Right.
I see Waco and Ruby Ridge more as logs thrown on an already burning fire. Because he used them as justification, but the fire was already going.
That's true. Also, just if this will make us feel a little bit better, we did send David Koresh to jail.
Yes.
Okay, good.
Now, I'm going to say we could, I know I put this up, but the Second Amendment, I think maybe can come off.
I think
at this
so
point.
Too. It's been there long enough.
Yeah.
Are you like some sort of gun nut, Rebecca? Because you're.
No, I honestly, I need to learn more about this whole Second Amendment. You know,
it's the right to bear arms.
I understand what it is. I understand what it is. And I'm not.
Is it so annoying living with a fact checker?
I'm not like a gun head over here. I'm not like, I don't love guns. I'm just, I think it's more complicated than just like pro gun, anti gun.
I'm going to say I want to take off those who didn't tattletale. And here's why. I don't know that anybody was capable of stopping him. Even the person who tried to stop him, he threatened to kill.
I have to disagree with that, because if somebody had said, hey, I think this guy's up to something, FBI agents would have been, you know, tailing, like following him. There's no way he could have gotten that far. And you know, the body count, like the so many people died and 19 children died. Like, that is just devastating. And if there's anything that you can do, and these people knew where he was planning to blow up the gun, the van. So they had to have known that the death toll would have been massive. I mean, he's planning to blow up a van in a government building.
Okay.
On a work day.
I mean, they're looking really nice for the big slap.
Yeah.
To me.
But then what about the Turner Diaries? Because they look real nice for the big slap too.
But the Turner Diaries is I think actually now is the time we could possibly take Turner Diaries off, because that's so theoretical. It's a work of fiction. And these people, actually, the non-tattletellers, like, they had concrete information. People's lives were at stake and they sat on that. And that's true. Just so evil.
Yeah. I agree with
that. It's like blaming rock music or heavy metal music for someone committing a crime.
That's true.
Yeah.
Right.
A slippery slope, as they say.
I agree.
I also think we can take the Gulf War and the military out, actually, because there are a lot of people who have served our country and they're not blowing up buildings.
There are people who came out of the military and who come out of the Gulf War who didn't commit these atrocities.
Exactly. I think I'm leaning towards sending McVeigh to jail and putting Fortier and Nichols, the Nichols brothers, all under those who didn't tattletale.
Yeah. So are we wanting to take right-wing extremist groups off?
What do you think, Kathy?
Just put it on me. So when we're talking about the right-wing extremist groups, we're talking about the militia groups,
yes,
of the 90s.
Yeah.
I would leave them up there.
Okay.
I think it's a big part of what happened, and it is connected in a way that I think we can't ignore.
I see your point, Kathy. Now I'm leaning toward the right wing, giving right wing extremist groups, militia groups, the slap.
Yeah.
I'm angry at those who didn't tattletale, and I will write them angry letters.
Well, we do occasionally use the backhand. So the backhand is something we don't use a lot, but occasionally when there's somebody else who deserves a slap, right, Amanda? We like to we go slap across the face with one.
Yeah.
And then we use a forehand with one group of people, and then we use a backhand with another. So I don't know if this is a case where you want to use that.
Yeah, and what I like about a backhand is if you're wearing your engagement ring or something like that, it really hurts on the back end. Yeah. So, okay, I think it's settled for me. I think we can call it. Right-wing extremist groups / militia groups, you're getting the big slap. Those who didn't tattletale, you're getting the backhand. Timothy McVeigh, you're going to the alarmist jail. Well, Kathy, thank you so much for joining us today and helping us get down to the bottom of who's to blame for the Oklahoma City bombing. Everyone, please check out Kathy's podcast, History of the 90s. You will not be disappointed.
Guys, it was really great to hang out with you for a bit and love your show.
Aw, thank you, Kathy.
After the Oklahoma City bombing, on June 11, 2001, McVeigh, at age 33, died by lethal injection at a U.S. penitentiary in Indiana. He was the first federal prisoner to be put to death since 1963. On May 26, 2004, Nichols was found guilty in Oklahoma State Court on 161 counts of murder. The jury spent 5 hours deliberating before announcing the verdict. District Judge Stephen Taylor sentenced Nichols to 161 consecutive life terms without the possibility of parole. The bombing was the nation's first single act of domestic terrorism, superseded in numbers of dead only by the attack on the World Trade Center on September 11, 2001 in New York City.
Vote for who you think is to blame by going to thealarmistpodcast.com. Follow us at The Alarmist The on Twitter, at The Alarmist Podcast on Instagram, or email us at thealarmistpodcast@gmail.com. Tune in next week. We'll be discussing one of the biggest rivalries of all time, the Kanye West-Taylor Swift feud.
Earios. Powered by Acast.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.